What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. Me, Duran MG, Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, our man, Graham Barfield. And it's wet outside, guys.
Dude, I know. What's going on, man? Like, I thought I lived in L.A. It's, you know what the worst thing about the rain is when you have a big, giant, double-coated dog that needs to go out two or three times, no matter if it's pouring rain or not. He gets soaked. You get soaked. I guess it's not a huge problem, but it's a major inconvenience. Let's put it that way.
I thought about that last night. I was sitting out on my balcony and watching somebody take his dog out in the rain, and I was just kind of like,
yeah. And Kylo is like so furry, he just gets soaked. And the dog is not smart enough not to go in the puddle or not to sit down in the wet grass. And then it becomes a major pain in the you-know-what.
I mean, Graham, you moved out here from Atlanta, so I imagine you were just expecting sunshine and rainbows all the time.
One thing I quickly discovered, people don't know how to drive in L.A. when it's raining.
No. They don't know how to drive in L.A., period.
No.
And the
especially
rain makes
when
it
it's
worse.
Raining.
Yes.
I mean, Atlanta, it rains like almost every day, especially in the winter. Mm. It's freezing and rainy and cold every day. But yeah, one thing I quickly discovered here is people don't really know how to drive in the rain.
No.
All that well.
No, and it's been raining for like 3 days straight here.
Blinkers are optional.
And well, yeah. The other thing about Los Angeles in the rain is that, you know, as soon as there are a couple of drops, every news station goes into storm watch.
Yeah. This is legitimately like a storm because this thing is lasting. I think it's not supposed to stop raining until like Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see storm here, but typically, like, from the East Coast, you know, I'm from Connecticut. You lived on the East Coast most of your life. Like, rain is just just rain.
It's a part of your
here,
life.
Here, it's a storm.
Yeah, it's a part of your life every day on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And on the West Coast, well, now I guess I'm one of them, too.
You're one of us now.
I'm one of them, too. But, no, I mean, it is genuinely funny that the difference in culture between rain.
Oh, I know.
How it's treated here and how it's treated across the country.
Although I will also say this, that those of us from California who were born and raised here, we sort of chuckle whenever there's like a mild tremor on the East Coast and everybody freaks the
bull. Yeah, I know.
That's actually
true. So not only dealing with the rain, but the teachers are on strike.
Yeah, so we have a guest in the studio.
So Matthew's here hanging out playing Fortnite.
I know. I'm checking it out.
And
I walked into the studio this morning and he was sitting in the seat that I typically do. And I just told him, why don't you just do my job? Go home. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah, man. So there's a lot going on.
A lot going on right now. Anyway. We'll see if there's a lot going on the other side of the glass where our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire, is hanging out. Murph, what's up?
My favorite thing about this show isn't the fantasy talk. It's now the weekly switch between either the updates on the weather in LA or the car chase.
Right?
By the way,
yesterday,
there was another good one, right?
Phenomenal.
Right? Was that the one where the woman stripped down?
Oh, wow.
Oh, wait. Like,
wow.
No,
wow.
I was nowhere near a television yesterday.
No, I don't know if that was yesterday or the day before.
Might have been Monday.
But, right. But there was one that went on for a while, and then the woman finally stopped. She got out of the car and stripped down, and then the police arrested her. It was very odd.
Let's do like an episode on just, you know, great car chases in LA history. My favorite is still the one where the guys threw cheeseburgers from In-N-Out at the TMZ bus. It was a whole thing.
They were
doing donuts on Hollywood Boulevard. It was a whole
thing. Oh, that was a few years ago, right?
Yeah, that was
I remember that.
That was like a good 2 hours that the newsroom did nothing because we were all staring at that.
The one Monday was pretty good. Marcus, if you haven't seen it, you would enjoy the one move inside of like a shopping parking lot.
Oh, wow.
He makes like a fake left and then just pops a quick right UE and there's like four cop cars. And they're like, oh no, we just screwed up majorly because this guy just like left. It was great.
Man, I mean, like it's funny in LA, we break these things down like they were game film.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we do. Yeah. All right, plenty to talk about. The coaching carousel, at least the head coaching carousel, appears to have come to a close. So we'll talk about the three hires or expected hires coming up in just a little bit. And we'll look at some guys that may or may not be retiring and figure out if they have some gas left in the tank, if we would take a chance on them during the 2019 season. We'll look at playoff challenge lineups, do some fantasy daily value picks as well. But to get started, let's do some news.
Let's through the news.
The big news right now has to do with the right shoulder of Cam Newton. It shut him down early this past season because we could see by the end of the year he just was not the guy that we were used to seeing. Now there is some speculation that he could possibly miss all of 2019 if he has to have off-season shoulder surgery. Of course, that determination has yet to be officially made. We'll keep an eye on that. But, Fabs, Cam Newton, I mean, not only is it big because we'd be missing a guy who is a top 10 fantasy quarterback, but that changes the entirety of that Carolina Panthers offense.
Yeah, I know.
It probably impacts Christian McCaffrey as well.
Yeah, no question about that. This is definitely a very newsworthy item in the world of fantasy football. And the thing that I'm concerned that could happen, and we see this with athletes sometime, is that they take the offseason to rest. Mm-hmm. And then when you get closer to camps, suddenly, whatever the ailment is, it ain't right still. And then they decide to have surgery, and then they miss the rest of the entire season. So I'm a little bit concerned that that could be the option. I mean, you guys watch the games. Everybody listening to the podcast watch the games. He looked terrible. He looked terrible down the stretch. And I don't know if rest is going to necessarily fix what was ailing him. So big news item. And right now, their backup quarterback,
Taylor Heinicke?
Hit him with the Heinicke!
Yeah, I mean, he's coming off of an elbow injury, too.
Right.
They're in real tough spot here to start the year, the Panthers are.
Yes.
Obviously, we're all concerned. This could potentially be the Andrew Luck situation all over again. Star quarterback coming off a major shoulder injury who tries to a number of ways to rehab it.
Yep.
Surgery through rehab. Yeah, obviously. I mean, look, Cam Newton at the start of the year was basically on a career pace. He was having his best year ever in passer rating, averaging 9.2 carries per game, easily the most of his career. And then final six, I mean, the Panthers lost six straight, and Cam was brutal.
He couldn't throw the ball 10 yards downfield.
He also wasn't running. He was also averaging like just over four rush attempts per game. So, I mean, it's early, obviously. We just have to hope for the best case scenario. By July, he's like 90%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the goal line opportunities mostly all went to...
They went to McCaffrey by the end.
McCaffrey, yep.
Yeah. Which did not suck for Christian McCaffrey.
No, it didn't.
Absolutely. You know, after in a year where we weren't sure if he was going to be able to get those goal line touches, if he was going to be the between the tackles guy, he ended up getting all of those and more.
Although, all the touches.
Although the guy that, you know, they could have used in that role is flourishing now with the Rams, see, Jay Anderson.
Mike Tolbert.
So funny story about that. So, you know, CJ's a good friend of mine, and I'm a huge Cowboys fan. So there was some friction there last week. I texted him and said, hey, dude, good luck in the game. Take it easy on my team. Because if you guys remember, the last time he played the Cowboys was when he was a Bronco, and he wrecked us. I mean, he made Ezekiel Elliott look like a pedestrian running back. CJ went nuts. And then he goes off and has a huge game. And, I mean, 5 weeks ago, how shocked would we have all been if someone said, you know what? In the divisional round of the NFL playoffs, the lead back for the Los Angeles Rams will not be Todd Gurley.
Well, we figured they would have lost.
It's going to be C.J. Anderson.
We figured they would have lost.
Who couldn't find a team. I mean, I'm proud of him as a friend. I mean, he has absolutely come out and made a statement the way that he's played behind this offensive line and in this offense, and hopefully this is going to get him a guaranteed job next year, whether it's with the Rams or someplace else. But now, what do you hear all over the news about this game? The Rams have a different component this time because they played and lost to the Saints earlier in the season. And what is that component? A running back who everyone online is making fun of because he looks a little heavy. And
he's a little chunky.
A running back who couldn't find a job. And he's now going to be a major component in Sean McVay's offense when they face the Saints. Fantasy football in the NFL is very, very unpredictable, my friends.
No doubt. So we talked about the Panthers and their quarterback situation. Could it be that there's one in the pipeline now? Kyler Murray, the Heisman Trophy winner from the University of Oklahoma, has declared his intention to enter the NFL draft. There were some kind of negotiations between Kyler Murray and the Oakland A's, who took him in the first round of the Major League Baseball draft this past year. And now Murray has declared that he will enter the NFL draft. There's talk that he could be as high as a second round pick. And Graham, this is a guy with an incredible skill set. We saw what he did both throwing and running the football for the Sooners. The knock on him is that he's kind of a smallish guy. He's not a big guy, but the way the NFL works now, the way these offenses work now, it seems like there is a place for him to at least compete for a starting job right away.
Yes, absolutely. I think this is probably one of the most interesting storylines to follow over the next 4 months is like where Kyler goes, right? Because, I mean, we've seen reports that he could go as early as top 10, top 15.
And Giants.
Ostensibly probably would not have left baseball if he did not know, within a shadow of a doubt, that he'd be a top 50 pick. Mm. I think that's kind of the floor for him. But, yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting case study because we have 13 starts to work with off Murray. If we've learned anything over the past couple of years, it's that your time in college starting matters. And there have been multiple studies that have shown this too. Like games started really matter in the NFL. Games started in college as it relates to projecting in the NFL really matters. And Kyler only has 14 right. starts under his belt, and he's 5'11".
Which, you know, I mean, you talk about number of starts. I mean, that was a thing. I go back to Mark Sanchez. He didn't have a ton of starts in college. I mean, who else can we go through?
I went back and looked, like, basically over the last, like, 30 years, quarterbacks drafted in the top, like, couple of rounds with less than 15 starts has basically been Cam Newton, Mitchell Trubisky, and Mark Sanchez. That's it.
Right. And
I mean,
so one of the, we know Cam. We kind of know what Cam's career arc is.
But here's the thing. Cam is a total freak, man.
Like, right. Right.
He's broken so many rules in terms of quarterback play over the course and duration of his career. Uh-huh. He's had such an awesome career. Trubisky, the jury's still out, and Mark Sanchez had a couple good years with the Jets, but now he's been for a backup.
Kind of a jag, you know? I mean, yeah. So this remains to be seen, but we know Kyler Murray, and look, I will say this. As a guy who grew up cheering for the A's and wanting to see the A's succeed, like I will say that it kind of sucks, but as somebody who likes to see athletes maximize their earning potential, yes. I appreciate it. Go for it. Go do it. And look, if it doesn't work out in the NFL, baseball will still be there.
You know, I've been talking about this too. It's like, what if he just prefers football? Like, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, why doesn't he just prefer football? I mean, he obviously went back to Oklahoma for his final year to play for a reason.
Right.
Because he likes football.
Right.
So, he's got a chance to start after Baker Mayfield.
So, yeah, hey, you look good on him to, kind of take this opportunity. And like I said, if it doesn't work out in the NFL, baseball will still be there. We have seen it before, so we could possibly see it again. Down in Jacksonville, things did not end well this season for Leonard Fournette, or for the Jaguars as a whole. But now, Leonard Fournette, Tom Coughlin, they've had a meeting. They've cleared the air. Everything seems to be okay, I guess. But now there's talks also that the Jaguars have interviewed John DeFilippo, and he looks like he's going to be the guy who takes over as the offensive coordinator there. We were talking about this before we started recording the podcast this morning. This seems to signal that maybe they're going to change the way they do business offensively down there, and maybe Fabs and Leonard Fournette's not going to be the centerpiece of this offense anymore?
I mean, who's your quarterback? I mean, the wide receivers, you got some good pieces there, but what's the quarterback situation right now? Speculation, Nick Foles, you know, you could sort of, tie him to DeFilippo, of course, in Philadelphia. But I would still think Fournette's going to be the centerpiece of this. The way that they built this team was ground and pound, play really good defense and run the ball and control the clock, time of possession. And this was just a lost season for me, for Fournette, and for a lot of fantasy owners out there. And I think the big concern for fantasy fans going into 2019 is durability, because Fournette has always seemed to be nicked up. He missed a lot of time this season with the hamstring injury. And then you had the nonsense at the end of the season where he got into the altercation in the Bills game. And then he and TJ Yeldon had a bit of a hissy fit there on the sidelines late in the season. And that's where this whole conversation with Coughlin came in. He's probably a second rounder next season. Mm-hmm. But I would really expect that if he can remain free of injuries, which has been a problem, he's going to see far enough touches to be an RB1. But there's just a lot of question marks about him.
Yeah, I mean,
injuries, attitude.
I mean, you know, Graham, him saying he didn't come in, or he could have been in better shape this year. That's not gonna make people excited about him. But
mm-hmm.
especially for a player who's dealt with ankle foot problems for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the question is, he's there. I mean, you know, will Carlos Hyde still be there next year? What's going to happen in that backfield?
Yeah.
Let's not forget, too, the Jags had to play 10 starting offensive linemen this year, including one of which was Ereck Flowers.
I mean,
they got destroyed on the offensive line. They were actually one of the healthiest teams in the NFL, and it actually really helped their playoff run in 2016.
Yeldon's a free agent also coming up, right? So
yeah, Yeldon is an unrestricted free agent.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, their offensive line fell apart. Blake Bortles fell apart. Leonard Fournette literally fell apart.
I mean, everything. Even that defense. I mean, that defense was the top defense in fantasy football last season, and this year, I don't know if they were in the top 15. They were pretty bad.
No team needed the offseason more than the Jags did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, everything went sideways for the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2018. So we'll see if they can put it back together. And Leonard Fournette, one way or another, will likely be a big part of that. We will stay down in the state of Florida. Bruce Arians says he wants DeSean Jackson to stick around with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Of course, Arians taking over as the head coach. We've got Byron Leftwich expected to be the play caller down there. And, I mean, When DeSean Jackson signed with the Buccaneers a couple of years ago, a lot of people, myself included, looked at this and said, man, this is going to be huge. I mean, you got him with Jameis. You put him on the other side of Mike Evans. You know, they've got a tight end. They didn't have O.J. Howard at the time, but Cameron Brait had emerged as a guy down there. We thought, man, this is it. This is really going to take things off. It didn't happen, mostly because Jameis struggled to connect with DeSean Jackson down the field. I mean, it was amazing. I didn't think anybody could actually consistently overthrow DeSean Jackson, but Jameis Winston did. So, I mean, I asked Graham, like, is a new play caller going to make the difference? Or is this just a matter of two players who just can't, for whatever reason, seem to connect with one another?
I don't know, man. I mean, you would think DeSean Jackson would be, like, one of the most perfect receivers for Jameis Winston and his throwing style, especially how he likes to throw the ball down the field, especially early and down distance. I don't know what they're going to do. Look, in 2019, D-Jax will be 33. They can save $10 million if they cut him pre-June 1. Mm-hmm. He'll obviously get a new restructured deal if he comes back for maybe a one-year deal. But, correct me if I'm wrong, Bruce Arians and Jameis Winston and DeSean Jackson, it just kind of seems like in common sense, like if you're just trying to make sense with your head, like those three are perfect for each other.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yeah, D-Jax and Jameis has struggled as a deep ball thrower, and it's kind of seemed like D-Jax has been a little bit combustible. It's a certainly really interesting situation. But again, like I'm going to go back and be all in on D-Jax again in 2019.
So you're going to buy,
if he's still there, Jameis is still there, and they obviously have Bruce. I'm gonna be back.
See, man, I'm waiting for the Chris Godwin break.
That's what I'm
throw a bit of a wrench into that situation.
I think that's kind of what deep down everybody in fantasy wants is D-Jax to move on, go back to the Eagles, mm-hmm. and then we can all play Chris Godwin copiously.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's my big fear is that he just blocks Chris Godwin mm-hmm. for another year and it kind of messes that whole thing up. Last bit of news. Mark Ingram says he is not looking to just leave New Orleans. Obviously, he missed the start of this year because of a suspension. Even when he got on the field, it was still very much the Alvin Kamara show this year. Last year, I think the two sort of split touches fairly evenly. This year, it was a lot more of Alvin Kamara. And so it sort of makes me wonder, Fabs, if Ingram does come back next year, how far down? I mean, does he drop another round or two just because he wasn't getting the kind of usage rates that we saw from him in, say, 2017?
I can't see him as a top 50 pick, that's for sure. And he's a guy who's going into his age 29 season. And I don't know that did the Saints pay him? I mean, he's a good back.
Right.
He's got the potential, we already know, to be a featured back in the NFL. We've seen it in the past. And I think we talked about Arians and the Bucks. Oh, I'd like to see him in that backfield.
I mean,
I would love to see him in that backfield. To me, that would be a really good fit for him. But I don't know if the Saints are going to pay him.
I mean, do they bring him back or do they just use Taysom Hill as their backup running back like they do with everything else?
I know. All the Taysom Hill truthers were like going out of their minds when he had that touchdown that got brought back by the penalty this past weekend. I know. But yeah, see, as a selfish and as a fantasy analyst and as a fantasy owner, we're all selfish. We don't want running back sharing carries. So I'm thinking Ingram, featured role. Tampa Bay has an opening, unless they believe in Peyton Barber or Ronald Jones. I don't know. But I'd love to see him go somewhere where he can actually be a guy who can catch 50 passes out of the backfield and see 18 to 20 touches per game. And I don't know if the Saints are going to sign a guy who's, you know, 1 year away from 30, the dreaded 30 years old for running backs, especially for a guy like Ingram, who earlier in his career, you know, had dealt with some injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting because you're right. I think all the things sort of stack against him getting a long-term deal right. in New Orleans. And I wonder, Graham, if they do they, you know, haven't taken a good look at the free agent market yet or if they go out in the draft, because we've seen the trend of teams, especially at the running back position, to kind of go cheaper, younger if possible. I mean, you know, I know there's the whole running backs don't matter crowd on Twitter, whatever. But the fact is, teams aren't – they're not going to spend big money on an aging running back, especially when they can get a guy who can give them similar production for a lot cheaper, either, like I said, in the draft or out in free agency right now.
And to that point, too, this is kind of a interesting – kind of free agents class for a number of reasons for running backs. I mean, obviously Le'Veon Bell will command a market. Mark Ingram's going to command a market.
Yep.
I don't know, man. I kind of think he comes back to New Orleans on like a team-friendly deal, like a 1 or 2 year deal. But all of these deals at this point, especially for running backs, are team-friendly, and I think that's surely where Ingram will go.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that, as with all the other things we just talked about in this section, and that is pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right, we will spin the coaching carousel, and I guess the ride might pretty much be over, it appears. The last time we talked to you, there were still three openings available. It appears that those three have all been settled. First, the one that we know for sure that was announced and has been, all done, the Jets. They brought in Adam Gase, who formerly of the Miami Dolphins. He is their new head coach, which I sort of laugh at the AFC East teams not naming the Patriots, playing this weird roulette with all these coaches. Right. You know, Rex Ryan going from one spot to another, Adam Gase going from one spot to another.
Could we get into what in the hell was
going
up
on with his
eyes?
It's the greatest. It's the newest meme on.
Did you see the
Twitter
one with the taco? Like he's following the taco. Like
I've seen that one. I've seen a bunch of like blowfish. It's weird.
What the heck,
my
man?
My question is,
it's creepy.
How did this slip under the table? You know what I mean?
Like how have we not seen
this
before?
NFL head coach for so long.
How did we not know this?
Right? How have we not noticed this guy goes into a press conference and his eyes start like, I don't know, like rolling out of his head almost?
Like, I don't know.
So
which
weird.
I guess it shows you how much we paid attention to Dolphins press conferences, I guess. Yeah. I guess. But
somebody out there has got a lot of time on their hands are looking back at every single press conference the Dolphins have ever had with Gase and seeing if they can see the eyeball movement. I mean, it was just so odd.
I do wonder if it was like a nervous tick for him, because I don't know. I mean,
it's got to be right.
It has to be a nervous tick.
I would think that before we would have seen like this would have been a meme the other day.
And maybe it's not good that the talk of Adam Gase signing with the Jets is that his eyeballs are a little odd. And I think people in Miami, and I have some friends who are Dolphins fans, are all laughing right now.
I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, this was a team that. They spend their first round draft pick on Sam Darnold, right? He's supposed to be the future at quarterback. They've got some decent young. I mean, you know, he and Robbie Anderson seemed to be a thing at the end of the year. Chris Herndon came out of nowhere. It was the first time in recent memory that the Jets had anything resembling a respectable tight end. Now you bring in Adam Gase, who a few years ago was this offensive genius, was supposed to get things going down in Miami, and it never really happened. You know, things fell apart. They ended up dealing Jay Ajayi because things didn't go well. Ryan Tannehill, a combination of just injuries and just not performing well, never blossomed into this quarterback that the Dolphins thought he could be. We've been waiting for years for the Devontae Parker breakout. Offensively, it just never came together in Miami the way we thought. I mean, Graham, if you are a Jets fan, you have to be at least a little bit concerned about this right now.
A lot of the, I guess you could say, excuses that people would make for Adam Gase go along the lines of everything you just said. Ryan Tannehill was never 100% healthy, which is true. Mm-hmm. Devontae Parker never broke out, which is true. Their offensive line has always been up and down. This year was actually one of their best years. Laramie Tunsil was fantastic this year. Gase certainly didn't have a lot to work with in Miami, but the facts are simple. I mean, he ran one of the slowest and most inefficient offenses in the NFL for 3 straight years. The Dolphins were bottom 4 in Football Outsiders pace of play, seconds in between play, for 3 straight years. They've been bottom 5 in yards gained per possession in 2 of the last 3. And in 2016, the 1 year that they weren't, was the year that they made the playoffs. Tannehill got hurt, and they had to play Matt Moore against the Steelers and got stomped. This is just such an uninspiring hire for me.
It is.
It's just so uninspiring.
And the thing that people don't bring up, and maybe they haven't, I just haven't listened to them, but, I mean, Gase's offenses as an OC head coach were top 4 2 years in a row, and who was his quarterback in Denver? Peyton Manning,
right,
who didn't need a coach. Okay,
the man kind of his own offensive
can go out there and do it all by himself. Since he has been separated from Peyton Manning, his offense is in terms of passing yards per game, 23rd, 26th, 16th, and 26th. Okay? Sometimes a coach can make the personnel better. All right? We're seeing that with Sean McVay and Jared Goff. Sometimes the personnel makes the coach look better than he is. And that's exactly what's gone on with Adam Gase. He has been a mediocre or worse OC or head coach since he has been separated from Peyton Manning, and that is fact.
I also just wonder, if you're the Jets, you were in the same division, right? I mean, you watched this first.
Dolphins know exactly
you
what the
saw
Jets
this
are going
to
run.
You saw this Dolphins team come to your house once a year. Like, I don't know. I'm sort of confused by it, and I think, you know, I wonder if you are Sam Darnold. I know Darnold has said all the great things, that they FaceTimed and everything seemed cool, and he's excited about the opportunity. I mean, what else is he really going to say publicly about his new head coach coming in? It just, I would be concerned about his development and the development of that offense around him with Adam Gase there.
You know what's going to happen because it's the Jets? Like, McCarthy is going to end up getting a job next year in 2020, and that team is going to end up going on and having success, and the Jets are going to look back and think, damn.
Could have been us.
He wanted to take the year off.
Could have been us. Could have been us. So now the other two openings are expected hires because the guys that are expected to get the job are still coaching in the playoffs. One is the Bengals. They are looking to get Rams quarterback coach Zach Taylor, who kind of fits the mold of he's a guy who stood next to Sean McVay for
at least
an hour.
It's crazy. It's like Sean McVay's college roommates, teammates on the football team, his cousin is going to get signed by an NFL team for an offensive position. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, this coaching tree that McVay has put out there, I mean, it's unreal. I mean, Zach Taylor had no success in Cincinnati. I mean, at the University of Cincinnati, he had none.
I mean,
the Bengals are going to it's a copycat league, right? They had Marvin Lewis for, 15, 16 years, whatever it was. And it was the same thing every single year. They're going the complete opposite now. If they went Hugh Jackson, everyone in Cincinnati would have went nuts. Okay? No one wants Hugh. They bring in, or they're expected to bring in, a guy with very little NFL experience who in college as an OC was mediocre at best. But they are trying like heck to follow in the footsteps of the teams, and in particular the Rams, who went out and took a chance on a young offensive mind, because that's what the NFL is doing now. And that's what we're seeing. That's how Kingsbury gets a job. I mean, that's what we're seeing now in the NFL. In a couple of years, it'll be different. But right now, everyone's trying to get that young head coach with the offensive mind.
I mean, with Cliff Kingsbury, right? And I know the record was not great at Texas Tech. He had a losing record there. But at least he had a track record of putting up offense. I mean, Graham, I know Zach Taylor, he was the interim OC in Miami for a year. He's been an OC in college. But I just feel like you want to talk about small sample size. I feel like we have a really small sample size with Zach Taylor as an offensive coordinator. So I just don't even know what to expect from him in Cincinnati.
Neither do I. That's okay. That's okay to not know what's going to happen.
Yep.
I have no idea. Look, I mean, he spent 4 years under Joe Philbin. Mm-hmm. And then that final year, like you mentioned, he was the interim OC under Dan Campbell. Remember that
song? Oh, yeah.
Dan Campbell.
PC principal from Philbin, South Park. Yeah.
Philbin got delayed there. I think Philbin got fired after like the first 4 or 5 games that year. Anyway, yeah, Dan Campbell. He was the OC under Dan Campbell that followed McVay to LA. I don't know, man. I really don't know. Bengals are such an interesting case study because, I mean, Dalton will ostensibly be back. A.J. Green's going to be back, but he's been healthy.
Dalton's not that much younger than Zach Taylor.
That's true.
I guess, look, as long as they hand the ball to Joe Mixon and they throw the ball to A.J. Green.
That's all we care about.
Then I guess it's okay, right? I mean, Zach Taylor's smart enough to figure that part out, right?
In 2016, when he was the OC of the Bearcats, according to Pro Football Focus, that offense received a grade of 66.4, which was 109th out of 130 schools. I mean, there's not a lot on his resume, and what is on his resume does not point to a guy who deserved to be a head coach in the NFL.
Man,
I think if we've learned anything with this head coaching period hire, if I may, just real quick, it's that teams aren't necessarily desperate for a new like this new innovative head coach. Like everybody's obviously looking for the new Sean McVay. It's that these teams are just like going in and allowing these guys who basically have had very little or no play calling experience in the NFL, and they just crush the interviews. They just go in there and absolutely smash the interviews and make it. I mean, they show it. I have to think at least they're showing in these interviews that they're forward thinking and they're right. willing to innovate, which is the difference between Zach Taylor and someone like Mike McCarthy, who's going to go in there, he's going to call his scheme. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to call his plays. Adam Gase is going to go into New York, and he's going to try to fit his scheme into those players. Where now we have these kind of new age of head coaches, where Zach Taylor, hopefully Cliff Kingsbury, do some things that at least help the quarterback facilitate the offense, as opposed to the coach just running the scheme and trying to facilitate the team.
And I think you're onto something there, Graham. I think what we've seen from the coaches who are successful, whether it is a Sean McVay or Kyle Shanahan or whomever, is more of a willingness to fit your offense around the personnel, right. as opposed to, you know, old school coaches where like you really would square peg round hole it.
Hugh Jackson is the perfect example of it. He could not call his offense because he didn't have his players. Like that is not an excuse in today's NFL. Mm-hmm. That's not an excuse.
Right.
Because not everybody is going to have a good offensive line. Actually, everyone pretty much has a bad offense line for like five teams. I mean, it's just a ridiculous excuse.
Well, and especially when Freddie Kitchens takes it over and does good things with it.
Right.
Of course. I mean, yeah, it is nice to see that the NFL this year has been kind of like the turning point year where we've finally seen these front offices and decision makers and owners say, you know what, we actually want to do something a little different. Yeah. It's great. I'm all for it. I still have no idea what to expect out of Zach Taylor. I'm excited for it, but I don't know what to say.
Right, as a fantasy analyst, we love this.
Yeah.
They're bringing in all these offensive guys. Hey. Maybe one or two of them will hit. Probably most of them won't, but it's going to be fun to see what these guys bring to the table here this upcoming season and moving forward.
Well, I'm going to be a downer now because the Dolphins are going defense.
Yeah.
Adam Gase leaves Miami, goes to New York. So Miami is expected to hire from within the division and bring in Patriots Brian Flores, who's technically the linebacker coach, but is also sort of assistant defensive coordinator, if you will. So he is expected to take over as the head coach in Miami whenever the Patriots run in the postseason ends, whenever that might be. So, I mean, we tend to know that when defensive coaches come in, that's the side of the ball that the team focuses on. That's where they try to build up. And this was a team in Miami that had a sputtering offense to begin with. They didn't use Kenyon Drake, which baffled us all. Mm-hmm. We talked about Devontae Parker never really breaking out. Ryan Tannehill likely is not going to be back next year. So, you know, I mean, we talked about, you know, would this be a never Dolphins sort of year? Yeah. And it is looking more and more like this might be a never Dolphins.
They're lining up to be potentially one of the five most unattractive offenses from a fantasy perspective in the league. Quarterback situation is a question mark. The running back situation is a question mark. I know Gore wants to come back for 2019. Who knows? Maybe he'll be their featured back guy. I have no idea. There's not a wide receiver on the roster that excites you. Mike Gesicki, who a lot of people were excited about coming out of college, kind of tanked in his rookie season, but that's part of the course with most tight ends. So, you know, he could have some upside moving forward, but there is just not a lot to like on this offensive team. Not a lot at all.
So I don't really know what to say about that beyond that.
We're a long way from Dan Marino and the Marx Brothers. That's for sure.
So that remains to be seen. But it appears that the head coaching carousel, at least for now, is done spinning. We still have assistants and coordinators being hired and interviewed all over the place. And certainly as we go throughout the spring and summer, I'm sure we'll talk about how that's going to work out. But it looks like all the top jobs are locked up and spoken for in the National Football League. I was looking and saw, you know, this is the time of year where, you know, guys who are of a certain age are talking about whether or not they're going to come back and play for another season. And I looked at four guys who are up there in age or have, you know, taken a lot of lumps and about whom retirement is maybe being whispered and thinking, okay, if these guys come back, do they have enough left in the tank that you would consider drafting them? And maybe where you consider drafting them. So I got four guys on this list. Want to get your takes on them. The first one, Rob Gronkowski, who hasn't been in the league maybe as long as the other names I have on my list, but has certainly taken a physical beating. I mean, there's no way around that. And we saw at the end of this season, he did not look like the same Gronk we were used to seeing. He only caught one pass. Now, mind you, he did a great job blocking. That was the story, against the Chargers on Sunday, was how well he blocked and moved that, helped move that offensive line along. But as in terms of being that pass catching threat, just wasn't the same guy. If he comes back and he says he's not really thinking about retirement, Fab, we know the tight end position is pretty awful.
Weak.
So I would imagine he's still going to be a top three or four tight end off the board. But I think the days of us talking about him as like a second round pick are long gone now.
I mean, top 50 pick. That's going to be the question. I don't know that he goes in the first five rounds of a 10-team draft. But you're right. The tight end position is so weak. And even after, like, Eric Ebron went in and had such a monster season with the Colts, I mean, is he a lock to get drafted ahead of Rob Gronkowski with Jack Doyle coming back? I don't know. But because the tight end position is so bad, O.J. Howard will definitely be a guy that I'll be targeting at that position next season, especially with Arians there. But that it's going to come down to name value, mm-hmm. weak position. He's still going to end up being a tight end one. I mean, that's a lock. And if he does come back, I would not be surprised. I mean, Kelsey's going to go ahead of him. Ertz is going to go ahead of him. Kittle's going to go ahead of him.
Yeah.
And then
it's just such
maybe Ebron.
It's such a top heavy position right now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know. I mean, Gronkowski. I mean, he hasn't been right all year. I mean, he has been way less.
Three touchdowns.
He was way less than 100%. Going back and even watching him, like, week two, week three, he's just not been the same player all year. And that's the scary part, right? It's like he's just hit this age cliff where all of these injuries, back, elbow, dude. ACL, everything's just caught up with him.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And heck, what about his teammate, Tom Brady?
Yeah.
You want to talk about another guy who started to fall off?
Yeah.
Woo. Where does he get drafted?
It's just going to be a cost thing with Gronk, right? I mean, if he does come back, if he's a seventh or eighth round pick, I think we could all say we'd nibble. I mean, I'd be lying. I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely would. I think the other part of that, though, that you talk about, you know, with Brady and what is in store for him next year, is that this became a run heavy offense this year. I mean, it was just not the same. They relied a lot on Sony Michel. When they threw the ball, a lot of times it was dump offs to James White. I mean, we saw, 15, 16 passes against the Chargers over the weekend.
Yeah,
I mean,
he had 16 targets for less than 100 yards.
Right.
That's insane, dude.
Right. So, I mean, the nature of the offense has changed as well. Gronk is not the vertical threat that he once was. This offense is not the vertical passing offense that it once was. And I think that's something to take into account when you're looking at drafting pretty much any Patriots, but especially Rob Gronkowski next year.
Yeah, and I posted my 150 fantasy facts, mm-hmm. which is up from 101 in the past. The research guys really helped me put on some good stuff. Tom Brady, 29 touchdown passes, his fewest he's had in a full season since 2013. He averaged 17.5 fantasy points per game this season, which is his lowest since 2014. He finished with fewer than 18 fantasy points in six of his last eight games, averaged 15 points during that time. Father time comes for everybody, except for Frank Gore. Yep. And he's knocking on Tom Brady's doorstep from a fantasy perspective.
By the way, if we want to talk about, we talked a lot about the tight end position this year and how it wasn't great, but Scott Pianowski from Yahoo put it in, I think, a good perspective on Twitter. He said, we saw three of the best eight tight end seasons of the decade, four of 14. It was just the middle class, kind of that middle tier of guys that really kind of stunk it up. And that's what left us disappointed. I mean, we had Kelsey, Kittle, Ertz, you know, maybe even Ebron, you could put in that group that had really good years. Everybody else just kind of left us wanting. So we'll see. Another tight end who is definitely a lot more aged than Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Gates. He came back early in the season after Hunter Henry went down with an injury and was not close to being the Antonio Gates we were used to. We saw the Chargers target him late in the season. We saw them target him in some weird situations, too, in that game against New England. It was sort of odd. But he says he wants to come back and play again. Now, whether or not that's with the Chargers remains to be seen. He was not a guy that people were checking for, really, this past year. And, Graham, I can't imagine people are going to be clamoring to draft Antonio Gates next year if he's back.
Please, God, if you're listening. Give us one healthy year of Hunter Henry, please.
Please.
I know.
With Phillip Rivers still in his prime, give us one healthy year of Hunter Henry, and I will be happy.
Yeah, he's going to be on every fantasy analyst breakout list for 2019. Every single one.
That he'll be, you know, he'll be fantasy comeback player of the year candidate. He'll be a breakout candidate. Yep. All of that.
Everyone's going to be all in on Hunter Henry, especially with how bad the tight end position was overall this season. Hunter Henry or Rob Gronkowski, I think that's a no-brainer.
Oh, it's a no-brainer.
I think it's a no-brainer.
It's Hunter Henry all
day.
Yeah,
it's double H.
So I would say this. I mean, so maybe there is a little bit of hope for depth, right? I mean, we know the top three guys, Kelce, Kittle, and Ertz in some form there. You know, hopefully Hunter Henry is back and healthy again. Hopefully we can get a full, at least semi-healthy season from Greg Olsen, although Cam Newton's availability may impact that somewhat. You know, David Njoku continues to develop from what we saw this past year. You know, O.J. Howard can stay healthy for a full year. Maybe there's some hope for depth at the tight end position.
Delanie Walker
will be back next year.
Everybody kind of forgot Delanie Walker
absolutely
broke his ankle in week one.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely
right.
I mean,
that killed the position, too. I mean, because he was a stalwart, like, eighth, ninth round pick this year.
No, you're absolutely right.
There was a chance that position, and I think this was the worst-case scenario for this season, where Gronkowski was terrible, where Olsen got hurt, where Delanie got hurt.
Olsen got hurt
where
twice.
Henry got hurt, right. So it should be, I don't know how it couldn't be deeper. It should be deeper next year.
It should be deeper. Question, though. Would you guys rather take – would you take productive yet injury-prone Jordan Reed or healthy and unproductive Jordan Reed? Which one do you
guys – I don't know. Right?
Because we got mostly healthy yet very unproductive Jordan Reed.
13, 14 games from him and not much.
And not much in the way of production. No. Another name that may or may not be there next year, still mulling things over, is Larry Fitzgerald, who I've been through 15 seasons, most of them really outstanding. This year, like most of his Cardinals teammates, it left something to be desired. But he says he's still deciding whether or not he's going to come back for year 16. Cliff Kingsbury is there now. Hopefully this new dynamic offense and this new passing game is coming with him. If Larry Fitzgerald comes back, I mean, Fabs, are you taking kind of a mid to late round shot? Because I feel like he's definitely a kind of later round guy at this point. Are you taking a shot at him?
I think Christian Kirk goes ahead of him in most drafts.
I think so.
Right?
I think so.
You go with the upside, and Fitzgerald, there was a time earlier in his career where we kind of thought it was coming to an end statistically, and then he rebounded and had several good seasons in a row. The guy's going to the Hall of Fame. There's no question about that. But with Rosen under center, we expect Rosen to be under center. There's been some chatter that, you know, he could be traded, whatever the case may be. I don't think that's going to happen. But if Fitzgerald does come back, and currently he's not under contract, he is going to end up being one of those late-round flyer guys that you take as maybe your fourth wide receiver. Christian Kirk is the future there, and he showed a very good rapport with Rosen when the two were out there this past season during their rookie campaigns.
I mean, when it was all said and done, and mostly because of his availability, Larry Fitzgerald still led the Cardinals in receiving this year. I mean, he had the most catches. He had the most yards. Now, mind you, just 69 receptions, 734 yards, well down from what we're used to seeing for Larry Fitzgerald. Yep. But we know, Graham, when he's on the field, he's still a reliable option. He's still trustworthy for whoever the quarterback is.
The Cardinals better hope Fitz comes back, because if they don't, I mean, it's Christian Kirk and then
and nothing.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's it.
Yep. It's Chad Williams, Trent Sherfield, who kind of came on late in the year just because of Christian Kirk's injury.
Mm-hmm.
The Cardinals, I mean, they
have so much to fix. I mean, because obviously the offensive line is priority number one for this group.
Well, their offensive line has been bad since Carson Palmer was there.
Right.
In 2015, I mean, that was one of the things holding back their kind of championship run that year. Their offensive line has been bad. Steve Keim has basically punted on it for every year since then.
It's amazing how quickly things can change in the NFL. I mean, just a few seasons ago, the Cardinals were contenders.
Mm-hmm.
And now I thought they're going to be bottom feeders.
I thought they'd win the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah.
2015
they were on the way, it looked
Pat Pete was healthy. Everyone was healthy there.
They were on their way, certainly. Yep. Last name on this list.
I like how you put this name on there, by the way.
Adam Vinatieri, right?
Hey.
I don't want to get into this whole thing about, you know, kickers and fantasy or whatever. Look, they're here. We're using them. We're talking about Adam Vinatieri. The guy has been money for so long. Obviously, things didn't quite work out for him with the Colts against the Chiefs in the snow. I know Raider fans were salty that he's finally missing snow kicks against teams that are not the Raiders. But whatever. Fabs, I know we look at kickers, and I think for a lot of people, you know, you look at when you draft your kicker, it a lot of times is sort of based on name value, right? I mean, people don't necessarily do that much research into them. So I feel like if Adam Vinatieri comes back and he says he's not done playing yet, he's still going to be a guy who gets drafted regardless of where he is because people are just going to see the name and say, oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, late.
Click, and he's going to go.
Because age doesn't matter at the kicker position, obviously. I mean, if you guys watch the games, I mean, he had the white beard going on. You know, this guy.
I was just about to say, the only reason I would draft him is for the beard. That beard unfreaking believable.
Yeah. I mean,
it's so good. That's
like some Ken Stabler stuff.
It's
there.
Like,
I mean,
it's like a, he looks like a, I don't know.
Well, it's like he and Frank Reich are having a beard off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. And actually, Vinatieri's beard is more white than Frank Reich's
beard.
It's
like they have like two philosophers on their team,
right?
Between Reich and Vinatieri.
I mean, the kicker position, and I know there's people out there who don't like it. I love playing kickers. Hey, Kaimi Fairbairn helped me win a league this season. Justin Tucker's helped me win a bunch of leagues over the past several seasons. And I still like having – I like trying to project these guys. It's almost impossible sometimes, but – it's a streaming position. It's just like defense.
Right.
And so that, you know, that's why even after Fairbairn had such a good season, you know, these guys aren't getting drafted until the late rounds. So Vinatieri won't get drafted until late. If he gets drafted at all, he's a streamer for me, much like a lot of these kickers out there.
All right. So we'll keep an eye on some of these guys, see whether or not they retire. And, you know, we'll talk about them next year if they are back and part of the whole mix next year. Before we get out of here, I want to do some playoff challenge stuff, some daily fantasy picks as well. But I want to let you know, speaking of the playoffs, you can stream every NFL playoff game live on your mobile or tablet through the NFL or Yahoo Sports app. So if you are out and about this weekend during the championship games, you don't have to miss out. You can just, you know, pull out the phone and take a look. Hopefully you're somewhere appropriate. If not, you know, be good at hiding. Whatever. Anyway, check it out. NFL or Yahoo Sports app. You can check it out streaming live. Playoff challenge. At this point, I kind of went bold trying to go Chargers, see if I can get that leg up, but obviously that didn't work out. So now I'm on the Chiefs and Saints, and I just, at this point, I don't see any other real... I mean, I guess you could go with the Rams, but the two highest scoring offenses are still playing right now.
This is going to be fun. The four best teams in the NFL are still alive.
It's the four top teams in points per game.
You can make an argument for all of these teams going to the Super Bowl. The Patriots, would it be a surprise if it beat the Chiefs? No. Would it be a surprise if the Rams beat the Saints? No, wouldn't be. These teams are all elite teams, which is going to make the Super Bowl so much fun. I've had all Chiefs and Zeke Elliott right from the wild card round. So, of course, I have to replace Zeke. That one hurt. I'm putting in Damian Williams because I've been all in on Chiefs and Saints ever since this whole thing started.
Why not? So I think I would imagine at this point most people probably going Chiefs and Saints, maybe some Rams sprinkled in there for good measure. But, yeah, that's a playoff challenge. Daily Fantasy, our value pick of the week. I went Cordarrelle Patterson. I just have this feeling.
Hey.
It just feels like this is the kind of game where, you know, if you are the Chiefs, you're trying to figure out, you know, how do we make sure we stop Julian Edelman? How do we stop Gronk? How do we lock down on James White and or Sony Michel? And this is when, you know, Bill Belichick starts running jet sweeps to Cordarrelle Patterson. That's when they give him little dump offs or whatever. I would think, you know, there may not be a ton of opportunities, but Patterson has the opportunity to be a big play guy, and I would be willing to just kind of make a dart throw at Cordarrelle Patterson this week.
Yeah, I'm digging on Ted Ginn. Michael Thomas had all the targets
this week.
But Ginn was second with 7, and I like the matchup, potentially lining up against Aqib Talib in this one, and Ginn is someone who can take the top off of defense. He's like that great best ball play, and I think he's worth a shot in what should be a ridiculously high-scoring game. I don't know what the number is for this game, but it's got to be high.
Yeah. I'm going to stay on the Saints, to Fabs' point, and kind of target Mark Ingram a little bit this week. Rams obviously have a very poor run defense. During the regular season, they had a very poor run defense. Obviously came off a great game against Zeke. But Ingram has scored over 5 more fantasy points per game at home. Mm-hmm. We're expecting points in New Orleans. I think Ingram's kind of a fun little bet for it. For a touchdown or two.
Yeah.
Not a bad pick.
By the way, Marcus, so have you seen 3 Identical Strangers yet?
I have not. It's on my list of things to watch.
If you're out there and it's raining and you're bored, it is good. I watched it last night, and The story is amazing. It is amazing. You can go on Amazon, check it out. Graham,
Yeah, it's on my list. It's on my list of things to
watch. I know it's completely out of left field here, but like, unbelievable story and a heartbreaking story and something that I think everyone would sort of enjoy just as a piece of art. The film is tremendous, and the story it's nothing short of unbelievable.
Right.
It really is.
It is now on my list.
Yeah, there put it go. On your list, man. It's so good.
Sounds good. So that's it. We are done. We appreciate you listening as always. Remember, tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, when life gives you lemons, squirt someone in the eye. We'll see you next week.